Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recording.
Hello, Chicago!
That was a 63-yard punt by Pat O'Donnell.
Best offensive play the Bears have had all day.
Yeah. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. I love days like this. John's got to love doing middays because you look outside, the sun is shining, tons of people walking down Michigan Avenue. I mean, it's just wonderful. Reminds me I need to mow my lawn again. God, my grass is growing this summer. I'm so happy. Jeez, I just love it. Kim, how are you?
I'm good, Pete. How are you?
Good. You see the Bear game yesterday?
I did, and then I saw the Packer game last night, and both of them were awful.
Why do I have so many Packer fans in my life? I'm married to one. She was screaming at the TV last night. I'm like, Sarah, at least you won a game this season. There's no hope for us. We got spanked.
29-0. The only good part of the sports day that I had yesterday was I was at the Cubs game, and it was beautiful, and they won, so that was great.
Cubs had a great weekend.
Yes,
swept
they did.
The Cardinals. My neighbor is a Cardinal fan. Very good stuff for the Cubs. The Emmy Awards last. By the way, we're going to talk Bears with Doug Plank, former number 46 from the Chicago Bears. He's going to join us at 2:35. He was in Tampa yesterday at the game. Didn't have nice things to say via text when we were texting this morning about the Bears. The mayor is going to join us in about 10 minutes. He's calling us from New York. He's got a few announcements to make. He'll do it on WGN. And the Emmy Awards last night. Did everybody see the Emmys? Elle, if you, you don't have cable, so you didn't see anything last night, but you saw some of the stuff online.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I saw the fashion reviews.
And you saw Sean Spicer.
I saw Sean Spicer. Uh-huh. That was awesome.
Kim, did you watch the Emmys last night?
Well, I was kind of going back and forth between the Packer game and the Emmys.
So we were doing the same thing.
Didn't see everything in its entirety.
Well, Spicer was a standout last night.
Yeah, I did watch that again this morning.
And, of course, the fashion, people talking about the fashion. I don't understand people that don't wear more traditional. I know they want to get out there and get in the magazines and all over the websites, but I understand it's a black tie event and you could wear red, you could wear different colors. But Sarah Paulson was wearing like this spacesuit last night that no one is talking about on any of the websites.
Well,
have you guys seen that at all?
It was mentioned.
No, I didn't see that.
I saw it in an article in it was a Cosmopolitan Snapchat.
Okay.
Story.
What'd they say about it?
They said it was cool. They said it was the number two best silver dress last night.
She looked like the spaceman on top of the MTV statue during the MTV Awards. That's what she looked like. She had the big shoulders. Google it, Kim. You're going to laugh.
I'm looking right now.
I don't really understand what she was wearing. And she presented with Jason Bateman towards the end of the show. And I'm thinking, God, that just doesn't work. And no one mentioned anything about it. And I'm a man, so I'm going to ask you, did it work? Elif?
I didn't like it.
Okay. You wouldn't wear something like that?
No.
The big shoulders?
I don't like the big shoulders. I don't have anything. I don't have a problem with modernizing the Emmy or red carpet look, but this is a little too out there for me, personally. Kim?
Hold on. I'm trying to find it.
Just Google.
I know I Googled the wrong name.
Darn. Sarah Paulson, P-A-U-L-S-O-N. Sarah played Marcia Clark in the O.J. series on right. FX. She's been all over the place.
Oh, boy.
How would you describe that?
Puffy sleeves.
Uh-huh. Which aren't in. Okay. A silver.
It's silver.
She looked like a trophy.
Yeah. It looks like wide silver sequins.
Wow.
And it looks like it's cut out in the back as well, because I see some slits on the side.
Don't really understand.
It wouldn't be bad if it didn't have the puffy sleeves. It's just the puffy sleeves are, if it were more, you know, tight fitting and you got rid of that wideness of the puffy sleeves.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
It would be better. No. I mean, I'm not saying it would be my first choice, but it would definitely be better. Who designed it? Do we know?
Yes, I do.
Oh, Prada?
You know? You're asking the wrong guy. By the way, Oprah at the end wore a white pantsuit. Off the charts, fantastic. However,
was that a nod to Hillary?
I don't know. Off the charts, she looked fantastic. However, she was wearing Harry Carey's glasses. I don't get it. I just don't understand these women.
Does she need them to read, maybe?
I don't know. She wore them the entire show because people kept thanking Oprah because she sat in the front row. All right, what's it say?
Carolina, go ahead, Elle. It's by Carolina Herrera.
Herrera.
Who is that?
A designer.
She's
I don't know.
You know, big time. I mean,
I have no idea. I know Hugo Boss. Something else that I want to mention.
I need a dress for my son's wedding. I don't think I'll be choosing that.
No. We're going to talk Emmy Awards with Matt Rausch, who was on with John on Friday. He's the senior critic for TV Guide. He's going to join us right after 2 o'clock. I'm taking the Kennedy into work. I take the Kennedy to the radio station when I'm here. And between Armitage and North Avenue, there's a billboard for the Illinois Lottery. Everybody know what I'm talking about here? It's on the east side of the Kennedy. Mm-hmm. It's been there forever. For the Illinois Lottery, forever. I think the flip side is for Wrigley Gum. Well, they're doing some work on that billboard, and they have some scaffolding piled up all the way up, okay? So just imagine this huge billboard off the Kennedy right near Armitage, and underneath you have tons of scaffolding all the way to the ground. Well, as I'm driving by today, I see a guy that is hanging off the top of the scaffolding, and it looks like someone's going to toss something up to him, but he is hanging by one arm.
That seriously makes my palms sweat just thinking about it. I mean, really, it's like curling up my toes and my palms are sweating.
Now, I had two thoughts. Number one, what's the highest you've climbed as an adult? Because I feel like as we get older, and Elif, you're not even there yet because you're in your mid-20s, but I feel like once you hit 40, you can't do heights anymore, right?
Well, I ski, so that doesn't bother me.
Well, skiing's different. I mean, can you look over the side of a building or stand on scaffolding somewhere?
No, I mean, I'm telling you, my palms are sweating just talking about it. So, no, the thought of just even going up into the Willis Tower or to the John Hancock where they have the things where you look over the edge.
You can't do that?
No, I don't think I could do it.
See, it's scary, but once I take that first step, I can do that. However, standing on scaffolding in the middle of, you know, the city, underneath a billboard, holding yourself by one arm, that's pretty scary to me as an adult. But then I had a second thought. Every year, when I grew up in Peoria. My father worked at Caterpillar for 35 years. He was an engineer. And at the end of July, every single year, Caterpillar used to close down and everybody would go on vacation. So the last 2 weeks in July, I don't know if they still do it anymore, but Cat would take vacation. So every year, we would do two things. Number one, we would paint the house the first week, and the second week, we would go to Wisconsin. So my father would rent scaffolding. And I was in 6th, 7th, 8th grade. He would rent scaffolding. We had this old colonial farmhouse. And he would pile it all the way to the top, and he would have all of us help him paint. Now, Kim, you have kids. I have a 12-year-old Charlie who makes me nervous when he climbs a tree, okay? Makes me nervous when he climbs a tree. Would you ever let your kid on that scaffolding and paint your house?
No way.
Never!
Well, you had a lot of kids, so maybe your dad was looking to get rid of a few.
He was thinking, all right, I got 12 kids, I got 8 boys. If I lose one, it's not a big deal. But it was crazy. And we'd hang up Christmas lights during the wintertime. We'd grab a ladder and we'd climb all the way up the ladder. And then we'd climb on the roof and get to the peak of the house.
Is that a fond memory for you? Or is it one of those like, oh, my God, I can't believe you made us do this?
Well, we just did it every year. We didn't think about it. And I started thinking to myself, is my son, who's 12, who's never experienced anything like this, is he going to be soft? Are we raising our kids to be snowflakes? Are they, we're helicopter parents now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, you know, my husband and I are pretty bad about just screwing in a light bulb. So I know my boys are not, you know, power tool kind of a guy.
Right.
They're not.
There was a kid's father at my son's school that said to me a month ago, you know, we got to toughen up these kids. What if we drop them off at Wrigley on a Saturday afternoon and they find their way home? And I laughed it off, but I started thinking about that. I mean, you know, they hop on the train, hop on the bus, find their way home. They're 12. Were you guys riding the bus when you were 12? I was.
Yeah.
My mother didn't show me how to get on a bus.
My parents, I mean, didn't they walk you to the bus like the first few times?
I'm talking the city bus to take it to the mall.
Oh, no.
We used to hop on the city bus in Peoria, take it to the mall. Yeah.
I did that, but not for school. I mean, I did ride the bus to the mall to go shopping and come home. when I was about 13 or 14.
You always second guess yourself as a parent. Number
right.
one, you always feel guilty about something.
Well, but don't you feel better now? Just think about it. When we were little kids, we didn't have cell phones and you couldn't just have constant contact with your parents to call them. I mean, we had to like make a time to be picked up, the
right.
place where you'd be picked up. It's a lot easier now. You know, at least parents can rest easier a little bit because you can get a hold of your kids so quickly.
It's always instant access nowadays. It's funny that you bring that up because my son Charlie said, hey, Dad, can I bring my mobile phone because I'm going to call you and let you know where I'm going to be because I'm picking him up right after the show today. So you're right. Constant contact. However, are we raising our kids to be soft? I would say yes.
You have a listener who says yes in the text line. 708 says, yes, we are raising them to be soft.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I do drop my kid and his friends off at Wrigley and they need to find their way home on a Saturday afternoon. That's not a big deal, is it? I think about the weirdest things. This is what I thought about on the way to work today. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you'd like to chime in. Also, our text line. Coming up, we're going to talk to the mayor. But first, if you need an effective real estate agent who can expose your home to the most buyers by creating a unique marketing and offer strategy and ultimately negotiate the most money possible for your home. Now, here's my recommendation, okay? Call Amy Kite with Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Not only are Amy's fees flexible, but you will actually receive an immediate offer. Here's how it works. Amy helps you negotiate through multiple offers. It's because of her huge marketing plan. But if it doesn't sell for the price and a deadline you agree to, she'll have it bought for cash. Anita knows all about Amy Kite. Anita came back with a third property. Amy knocked it out of the park again. This is what Amy does. 11 showings, 7 offers within a week, and under contract in 6 days for $10,000 over the asking price. Call the only agent I would call if I needed to sell my home. Amy Kite. Amy gets it. 847-877-9881. I've known Amy for a long time. She can sell your home. Amy Kite, 847-877-9881, or go online, amywillsellyourhome.com.
Human Anatomy with Rokan and Adam Bradovich.
OB, I appreciate you remaining calm as best you possibly could.
Let's try to get a victory. I think we got a group of guys that'll open up their hearts and go after everybody and try to get it done every week. Let's just get the coaches a little smarter.
I think that's going to require a moving truck, but okay.
Let me tell you something. Guess what? Give them a big old kick right in their dupas.
Thank you, OB.
I love you guys. You're the best.
The Bears Conversation with Rokan and Anna DeVlantis weekday afternoons on 720 WGN.
As a small business owner, you're always on the go. So how can you make sure you never miss a customer's call? Grasshopper. With Grasshopper, you get all the features of a business phone system. That's right. Grasshopper turns your cell phone into a business phone system that's affordable and incredibly easy to use. Get a toll-free or vanity phone number that's memorable and professional. Customers are forwarded to your phone and connected to you or your team wherever you are. And with our app, your outgoing calls and texts show up as your professional phone number. We'll transcribe your voicemails and send them to your email so you can determine their importance at a glance. So whether you're always on the go or working from home and need to keep business calls separate, or you simply want a professional tone, Grasshopper makes it happen. Set up your account in just minutes. There are no long-term contracts, and support is 24/7. Get your calls, stay connected, thrive. Now get $20 off your first month when you text PHONE to 99,000. That's PHONE to 99,000. Text PHONE to 99,000.
Allergies. Pollen in the air. Dogs in the house. Mold in the basement. Whatever triggers your allergy symptoms, it can really hold you back. Break through with Allegra 5-in-1 Relief. Allegra works fast, won't make you drowsy, provides 24-hour multi-symptom relief, and it's effective every day. Break through allergies with Allegra. Starts working in 1 hour, use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
The Home Depot is pouring more into paint and putting more money into the pockets of pros with top quality paints without the paint store price. Like Glidden paints. Glidden lasts longer, covers better, and costs less at the Home Depot. Nobody beats our prices, guaranteed. So save time and money with Glidden. Paints that get the job done. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. All right, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. It's 1:23. Coming up, we'll talk to Mayor Rahm Emanuel. We're talking about, are we raising our kids to be soft? 312-981-7200. Where is that text message? I'd love this one. I would leave in the morning, take trains, buses, my bike, went wherever I wanted. My kids won't order pizza unless it's online. They're doomed. Yeah, that's right. Remember, be home when the streetlights come on? Yeah, I do remember that. John, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My kids are now 38 and 36 years old. Kids now don't know how to mow the lawn when they are in high school. They don't know what a screwdriver is. My daughter, I remember when she went to school, she rode her bicycle, mind you, for 3.5 miles one way in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Not like we lived out in the country someplace, couldn't get around or something like this. Mm-hmm. 3.5 miles one way and one way back for 8 years, I think it was, something like that. It's the parents' fault. It's the parents. We can't blame the kids. The parents do everything for their kids.
They do.
From the time they change their diapers, they're still changing their diapers, and they're 15 years old. Blame the parents, look in the mirror, and blame yourself, parents.
It is so true, and that's one of the things that I told my wife. When Charlie was in fifth grade, he learns to mow the lawn, and he does to this day. Granted, I live in the city, and my front yard's the size of your master bath, but, you know, still, he's mowing the lawn. They got to learn these things. Where else are they going to learn them?
We're talking about basics. Even kids now, when you go in and get gas and you say, hey, I'm going to run and pump the gas.
Mm-hmm.
The kid's 12 years old and they go, pump the gas? What do you do? How do you do this?
Well,
it's just little things that the parents, and I don't want to blame one sex or the other. It's the mothers. It's the mothers. Can't let them do this. They might hurt themselves. And I'm talking about have the girls do it too. I mean, the girls are tough. They're good kids. But you got to make them do it.
We're all helicopter parents now.
Oh, a helicopter isn't the word.
That is true.
No, they're 747s over them.
747s. Anyway. Thank you, John. Have a good
day.
You're welcome. 312-981-7200. Pete McMurray in for John Williams. By the way, someone said a text, and it's so true. Charlie is on my phone plan, so he has my apps. So he's got the Uber app. So if I do drop him off at Wrigley, what's he going to do? He's going to call an Uber. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, I don't know what to do.
Well, but no, I don't think he could, because don't you have to use your thumb to, like, use your credit card with the Uber app, and that his thumb wouldn't work.
It's automatic.
App, right? Oh, it's automatic,
automatic
for,
oh,
okay.
Now. Yeah. This is something to think about.
He's heading to O'Hare. He's got a ticket for Hawaii.
I know. He could. 312-981-7200. 630, a timeout when I was a kid meant your blank is going to be knocked out. Yeah, a timeout was, hey, listen, you're done with everything. Go up to your room and hang out. Do we send our kids to their room anymore? We take away their phones nowadays. 847, if you dropped your kid at Wrigley, he'd get an Uber home. Yeah, that's true. 630, yes, we are raising them to be soft, but worse than that, we are raising them not to have to think. Just Google it. That is true. We do everything for our kids, or they're Googling everything. I know. 312-981-7200, Pete McMurray in for John Williams at 720 WGN. We're talking about, are we helicopter parents nowadays? Are we doing everything for our kids? We have Steve on the line. Steve, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I do not helicopter my kids at all. I've got 5 children. 18 is the oldest, 12 is the youngest.
Okay.
And probably because I'm older, I'm 50. The thing is everybody wants to be friends with their kid, right? And if you want to be friends with your kid all the time, you're not going to allow them to fail and allow them to put that bike tire on the wrong way.
Yep.
You're going to rush in and do it.
Yep.
Like my daughters like to bake. For the first 2 months of her baking, our kitchen was a mess. But my wife and I had to hold back, and instead of rushing in and helicopter around, break the eggs like this, do it like this, they've got to fail so they learn how to do it. And it's a long-term thinking. I want them, by the time they're 18 or 20, I want them to fly the coop. And they can't if you helicopter them all the time. You know, they don't get any skills by themselves.
Yep, you're so true. We can't helicopter our kids. Steve, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200. Appreciate the mayor taking time out of his busy schedule to join us on the phone with us, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mr. Mayor, we're talking about helicopter parents. Are you a helicopter parent?
I don't know. I think, you know, I would basically say no, but I'm clearly more involved in my kids' life than my parents were in ours. So I don't think by some standard of hyperventilating over everything.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do think you got to let, as your prior caller said, I think his name was Steve, if I heard that right.
Yep.
You got to, the greatest learning lesson in life is going to be how you recuperate from failure. And I agree that it is very hard, though, and it requires more parental respect.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go.
I can hear you. I'm in New York. That's the problem. I would just say, look, give you an example. I've pretty much gone to almost every one of my daughter's performances.
Right.
When I was when I performed in dance, my parents never showed up.
They never showed up.
Can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I have
my parents never showed up.
Well, they didn't. They probably didn't have time because they're working and you have brothers. I have seven brothers. I mean, baseball games. If I saw my mother at a game, it was a big deal.
Well, it was not that they were working and I work and stuff like that. It's just we put a priority on it. We as a society started guilt tripping parents that they weren't doing anything for their kids. And then it's kind of gone from nothing to overcompensating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's filled with a lot of... I think the reason I have a theory of this, that it's actually less about the amount of time. It should be more about the quality of time.
Yeah.
But the problem is when we do it with our kids, we're spending time, even when we're with them, on our telecommunication gear and other things, but we're really not present. So I made a practice. I'll give you an example. When my kids would go out from dinner or homework, I would, if I'm going to read the paper or I'm going to catch up on stuff, I would do it in their room. Not because, just to be present. And so that's where the kind of small, the conversations about something would happen where there's less tension. You can't organize a call. You can't organize a conversation with your child and make it a real. Because once they know you're sitting down to have that conversation, mm-hmm. they freeze.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would go up there.
It's true.
And then, you start talking about Shakespeare that they're studying. That leads to another discussion,
yep.
leads to something else, and that is where you're going to get them probing and asking questions to help answer things that they haven't figured out, and that's where you're going to get a close friendship and a relationship, a trust.
It's all about trust with your kids. I know you're limited with time.
Yeah.
I want to congratulate you on two things. Number one, the Sanctuary City ruling that came over on Friday. I like the dig with the president. And number two, the emissions. Can you talk about those two?
Yeah. Well, as I first said, let me go to the first one. One was, as I said before, we're going to be a Trump-free zone as a city. And the ruling not only was for Chicago, that the judge sided with us against the administration, but it has relevance to the United States of America and every city that is a welcoming city. Second is, Chicago is 40% of the way towards its climate change commitment vis-a-vis the Paris Agreement. The main drivers were we are number one in America for 54 million square feet under retrofit, better energy use. And we're proposing now a score for every major building. So it's whether it's a 3-star, a 2-star, or a 4-star. So the renters and the can force a landlord to make other additional improvements. And then in December 4th and 5th, Chicago is going to host all the major cities in Canada, the United States, and Mexico for joint agreements and signed customized plans where the mayors will sign their own customized plans on how they're going to achieve the Paris protocols for their respective city. And we're going to keep, I give you an example. 2 weeks ago, we started our LED lighting throughout the city of Chicago. All 300,000 streetlights will become energy efficient LED lights. Another major significant down payment on meeting our climate change policy and goals.
Back to the Sanctuary City thing for a second. We've talked about this before. Your grandparents were immigrants. My great-grandparents were immigrants. Yeah. You keep saying this is a city of immigrants. Here is my question.
Yeah.
There are illegal aliens here that are in Chicago that want to become citizens. So what's our end game here? These people want to pay taxes.
We call them undocumented, not illegal. But that said, and I think the terminology is helpful, at our neighborhood libraries, all our neighborhood libraries, we have citizenship corners to help people on the process and applying for citizenship. Second is to, I think, the opportunity to make the administration back off from what they were saying about Dreamers. You can maybe use it as a way to establish a more sane immigration policy that rewards people who aspire to not only come to America, but more importantly, to raise their kids. Look at the work ethic of recent immigrants and their children. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We want that entrepreneurship.
Right.
We want that work ethic. We want, you know, other countries around the globe have people wanting to leave. We are a country where people want to come to.
Right.
That is an example we want to hold up, not tear down.
Right.
So that's what I would say. And I think we need to help. I forgot the numbers. I used to know this by heart, but there's millions of people around the country. I think we have about 300,000 in Chicago, I think, that are citizen applicable, but they've not applied. And I think we need to figure out ways to help facilitate that process where people are here legally, could be citizens, and we should open the doors to helping them get to become citizens. Now, to those who are undocumented, there's a whole process that they have to conquer to. I just think it's an opportunity to actually do right for the people that make America as their home.
Right. There's got to be a way. We're talking with Mayor Rahm. Go ahead.
I want to add one thing that's kind of, in my view, since I like putting policy and politics together. You know, when Donald Trump became president, he was empathetic to Dreamers,
mm-hmm.
but he was going to be tough on sanctuary cities. He was going to fight cities about illegal immigrants, as he would say. And if you look at it 6 months later, Dreamers, and he lost on the sanctuary cities because Chicago was successful in his lawsuit. It's kind of upside down from where he thought he was going to be 6 months ago. They kind of got the worst of both worlds. They're fighting on a thing called Dreamers, which are really kids that you should be holding up. And they lost on a fight as it related to welcoming cities. Not that that was a bad fight they should have had anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually upside down from what their political goals were 6 months ago.
Mr. Mayor, you worked under President Clinton. You worked under President Obama. Is this presidential behavior with President Trump? With President Trump right now? With the retweets over the weekend?
Yeah, I don't. You know, look, it's not the tweet. It's what he's saying in the tweet. That's what I keep, you know, people said, oh, tweeting's not presidential. It's not. There's, you know, presidents always have evolved with social media or different types of media outlets. I remember when Bill Clinton started doing what was referred to as kind of the town hall style, as the Oprah style.
Right.
And people were like aghast or going on a Johnny Carson and playing in the jazz area. Every president evolves in how they use communication tools.
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying to people, don't worry about the fact that you're saying it's the content that is the problem, not the channel. And what is unpresidential is divisive language on race, divisive language on gender, pitting one American or one part of the country against another.
Yep.
That's the problem. Not that he tweeted about it, is that he holds those views.
Right.
Is the problem. And it is we have the first president, which is what is always scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another, like, we'll work through issues on the economy or whatever. What scares me about this guy is we have the first president that is hostile to democratic institutions and democratic process. He's more comfortable with a Putin, a Duarte. He's less comfortable with democratic institutions like the judicial process. That is, to me, what is threatening about him and unprecedented. And we as a country, I mean, when you think about our what is called our soft power around the world, we are an example that people can be measured against. We now have a president who is in every way communicating a level of comfort with strongmen. And governments that are not democratic, in fact, if anything, openly hostile democratic governments, mm-hmm. and that should never be, since the president is our face as a country to the world, we should not be communicating a value system that's anti-democratic.
I agree with you 100%. And before you go, I got to ask you about Amazon. Yeah. Are we going to get the second headquarters here in Chicago? I know you're pushing for that.
We're all pushing. Look, here's the thing. I've said this, and you and I have talked about this. Go look at their request for proposals. They talk about educated workforce. Chicago is a leader in the United States on highly educated, college-educated and postdoctorate students. They want good training for, you know, institutions of higher learning. Chicago has more universities than any other city in the United States but Boston. They want a world-class aviation system. Chicago's aviation system is no one close in the United States. Matches O'Hare, Midway, United, American, Southwest, since we're the only city with three major operators in them. In those cities, they want a public transportation system that is working and being modernized. And Chicago has over 93% of the people in the city would recommend the public transportation to a friend. They want a low cost of living, unlike Seattle. Chicago is the most affordable big city in the United States. And they want the ability to have a campus to grow in. So we have a lot of strength to offer. There's going to be a lot of competition. But I would say when you look at each box, Chicago's either from talent to training to
yep.
transportation to affordability. Chicago is either number one in that class or number two. We never dip to three or four. And that's going to come to our advantage. And focusing not on secondary issues like term limits and workers' comp and all this, focus on the fundamentals. And if you focus on the fundamentals, the Amazons, the McDonald's, the ConAgras, the Kraft Heinz, the GE Healthcares will beat a path to your front door.
And they'll be downtown. They call me the closer. Yeah. If you need me at that meeting, yeah. I can close it.
You're good at that?
I am. Yes. ABC, always be closing.
We're going to do an audition for who's going to be part of the team. We'll see if we can take your. You got any references I can look at?
Steve Cochran. Steve Cochran will stand in my corner. He will.
He will?
Yes.
I want somebody of credibility, though.
I'll let Cochran know that.
All right, brother.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That is the mayor of our great city. News, by the way, is brought to you by Pearl Mortgage. Kim, that would count for news, right? Having the mayor on?
We will count for that.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
He's introduced activities. DART has enlisted volunteers to offer all kinds of classes you rarely see in a jail.
Are we going to put a little rosemary?
Italian chef Bruno Abate gives cooking lessons.
I'm not here just to make food. I'm here to change the way you think, so don't come back in this place anymore.
720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. Last week, Steve Cochran had Sheriff Tom DART on his show, and I highly recommend that you go to WGNradio.com and listen to that because I love the sheriff. The reason being, he works on solutions. He's all about solutions, and one of the things that he's working on is getting inmates a skill, and they have a chef's class in there, which, of course, you just heard from 60 Minutes. And the sheriff was talking about that last week. And I'm like, I got to get the chef in because I know it. And he's here right now, Chef Bruno Abate. It's good to see you.
Ciao. Good to see you, too.
Go ahead and plug your restaurant on Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, my restaurant is Toco. In,
Toco.
1266 North Milwaukee Avenue.
Okay. You've been a chef in Chicago forever. Toco's been there for a very long time.
Yeah. I was the pioneer on Fulton Market, too. With the Fulton,
oh, yeah, Fulton Market.
Yeah, 2001. And now it's exploding, you know, so it's crazy.
How do you get involved with the sheriff? Does he call you up? You call him?
Well, no. I started 7 years ago, and I was on in the juvenile jail in St. Charles. So that's where I started the Recipe for Change. I mean, it was not Recipe for Change before, but that's where I started, you know, this mission to help people in jail. So then I went to five and a half years ago, I went to to the Cook County Jail.
Okay.
And then I met the sheriff, and he's just a wonderful person.
He loves you, man. He was talking you up on Cochran's show last week.
I love him too. He's about, like, you know, solution, make other people life better, and change the system, you know, in the Cook County Jail. It's a really...
Well, what happens? You go there, do you go there every day, a few times a week?
Yeah, I go every day. Yeah.
Every day you go to the jail?
Yeah, Monday to Friday.
Okay.
And then I have to work too, so in the daytime. And
Well, what's the kitchen look like? What are you working with?
Oh, the kitchen is beautiful.
The jail?
Oh, it's one of the most beautiful, innovative kitchen. Yeah, we have a... From professional pizza oven, gelato machine, espresso machine, one of the most beautiful kitchen. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a school, so we're teaching people, yeah.
How many inmates are you teaching on a daily basis?
About around 40, 48.
Yeah. Okay.
We have different classes. We have culinary classes.
Okay.
And then we have the art painting. And soon we're going to open a music studio. So we record in music and write music inside the jail. Yeah, so that's amazing, yeah. You found so many talent, you don't believe it.
Well, how does this come to you? Do you say to yourself one day, I want to help out these people that have been arrested?
I never been in jail or prison in my life.
Okay.
I have no relation with that in my family, but... it just came one night, 3:30 in the morning, my life changed. I got a call from God.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Now, does God call your home phone or your mobile phone? How does that work?
It was a call. I don't understand where it came from. Maybe there was a satellite or something.
So you wake up in the middle of the night and you come up with this idea.
Middle of the night, and a lot of strange things happen, and it's going to be a documentary about all this. So,
really?
In the future, yeah, and everything was very, very strange. So, and that's been 7 years now.
Chef Bruno Abate in the studio with us. What do you call the classes at the Cook County Jail? Are they called Recipe for Change?
Well, yeah, the organization is a Recipe for Change. We are 501c3.
Okay.
And so everybody can go online and see recipeforchangeproject.org. And you can see everything we do. We teach 200 people every year, and so far the only one got back in jail. So, you know, we've been reducing recidivism. I learned the words. It takes me 2 years. recidivism.
So let me get this straight. How many people have gone through your program?
Over 200.
Over 200, and one has returned to jail.
Yeah, so far that we have. Yeah,
so you feel like this is working.
It is working. Well, you know, when you give it back the self-esteem to people,
sure.
You give it back the trust, you give it back the dignity, that's what people need. So,
well, you're giving them a skill that they can go into the real world.
And then the skill.
Right.
So these are, you know, are the tools to make this inmates or ex-inmates
right.
Go back to society
sure.
And be a good citizen.
So do they get a certificate saying, hey, I passed this cooking class, and they can go get a job once they get out?
They get a certificate. They have a sanitation certificate. Everybody do class. So really, that was me.
Okay.
it's a very important. And also, you know, one thing we reach now, that when they go to the court, you know, they get... Every day, the men in our program.
Right. So the court sees that they're trying to become a better person, they get out of jail.
They take it out from the sentence.
Well, one of the things that the sheriff talked about is people are waiting for their court date, and they're in jail usually longer than they would have a sentence.
Yeah, we have
just to get a court date.
We have a people there for nothing. It's you know, everybody thinks, you know, people that go to jail or prison, they are criminal. They are not.
Right.
I mean, you know, these are. Are people they born in a different place?
Okay.
And they don't have parents or bad situation.
Sure.
So
broken home.
And that's what happened. I mean, this morning I have interviewed like about 20 guys, and most of the guys, they are there for driving with no drive license, and they may be going to wait for 6 months where they don't have a good lawyer or money
right.
to pay the bond, the $200, $300 bond. and people waiting there for 6 months.
So they're nonviolent criminals that are taking your classes.
No, they're not violent. And not violent. But, you know, the bad things that I want to talk about is how much money we spend. You think about it, it's $147 a day for one person to keep it there.
Wow.
So the taxpayer pays so much money for nothing. But not only that, we generate more mental illness.
Sure.
We create more problem with these people.
Right.
When they get out, they don't know what to do. They have a criminal record. And, you know, this has to stop. I mean, we really need to stop this cycle. Otherwise, you know, now in America, we have 80 million people with a criminal record. It's going to go up and up. And these are all people that cannot, it's impossible to find a job at one point.
Well, that's one of the things that Sheriff Dart talked about last week on Steve Cochran's show, and he talked about that on 60 Minutes, where I saw you on national TV and I spit out my dinner. But these guys, these men and women need a purpose. Now, are you teaching women to cook too?
Yeah, we're going to start in a couple of weeks. We're going to start the woman division. So I'm taking over like 40 women. And so, yeah, it's I'm very excited. Well, you know, I never approached the woman in prison. So I always been, you know, with the men and,
right.
and kids. So this is a new adventure, and we need to building a new kitchen. So I'm telling everybody, if you like to donate anything.
So these are all donations
all
to get the new kitchen.
Yes, okay. All donation. There is no, it's all private money. If you like to donate, go to recipeforchangeproject.org,
okay.
And you can donate and help us to make our community better.
So when you have these 48 people in your class every day, and they're all making a pizza, let's say, where does that go? Do they sell it somewhere?
Well, we have if you see my let's call pizzeria, where is a pizzeria?
Yep.
I mean, we've been selling 600 to 700 pizza a week to our inmates. We have an internship. So there is 8 people that come on the program. They do an internship to learn how to make pizza, to learn how the teamwork, to learn the ingredient, and, you know, and they get
God,
the
look
skill.
Look at you, man.
I mean, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
And
yeah.
How long have you lived in the United States?
Right now, it's been like about 16 years. So
16
I'm
years.
I'm an immigrant. Yeah, I hope the new president doesn't kick me out. Well, I don't learn English.
I mean, I can still understand you.
Okay, that's
and
good.
I've been to Toco a few times on Milwaukee.
<Thank you>.
Yes. But you're doing good work.
Yeah, the you know, we... The world, it looks like it doesn't get better, so we have to take, you know, our responsibility. And if everyone do a little bit every day, we can make it better.
Good for you. You're a good man. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's good to see you, too. You're my
Lebanese cousin.
Lebanese cousin.
Yes.
I want to say something about the pizza. Why a lot of people think is, you know, we give a pizza to the inmates, mm-hmm. No. It's not a taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
The inmates pay
okay.
for the home pizza. This is money they get from family. But the good things about selling pizza, well, a lot of people say, you know, there was an article saying, oh, now the inmates get pizza delivered in the cell, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
The fact that you know, we can sell pizza and give the opportunity to the inmates to buy what they want with their own money, it's a really important thing.
It's very powerful for
yep. them. It's like a dignity.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's,
hey, with my money, I don't have to buy the garbage they sell, you know,
right.
the commissary. They sell all garbage. It's bad for them. So they spend money to get sick. We give you pizza. The pizza costs $5 to $7. The ingredient come from Italy, the flour, the mozzarella, everything is perfect. So we give you fresh vegetable, all those kind of things there, and they really love it. So it's really, you know, and the money that when if we have a profit, it goes back to the program. And
so
to
you
help,
reinvest it.
Yeah,
okay.
and to help more program in the Cook County Jail. So why not?
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. I mean, you know, so more program like this. And yeah.
What is the website where people can donate and check it out?
Yeah, it's called recipeforchangeproject.org. Org.
And you could stop by Bruno's restaurant, Tuco, at Milwaukee near Ashland. It's good.
Yes, and you know, I'm not here to advertise in my restaurant, but I'm, you know, I care a lot about this, and you know, and
I know you care about a lot about it.
Everybody, it's so beautiful, to help other people and see, and we're gonna help the kids. But that's how we stop the criminality. You know,
that's what it's all about.
Yes.
Thank you for coming in, Bruno. It's good
Thank
to see you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. God bless you and God bless everybody. And please, recipeforchangeproject.org.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
What really matters to Donald Trump is ratings. You got to have the big numbers. And I certainly hope we achieve that tonight. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no way of knowing how big our audience is. I mean, is there anyone who could say how big the audience is? Sean, do you know?
Witness and Emmys, period.
720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. John will be back tomorrow. He talked to this man on Friday before the Emmy Awards. The senior critic for TV Guide is Matt Rausch on the phone with us. Matt, what did you think of the show last night?
Is it still happening? I mean, these shows tend to go on so long, although in this case they were rushing off the big winners at the very end because they sort of timed things badly. It was an okay show. It was certainly, I think you look at the list of winners and you find little cause to complain. It was a really great year for television. A lot of new shows were in contention. I mean, a lot of shows got shut out, but the shows that won, for the most part, really deserved it. So in that regards, that was pretty good. And the show itself, of course, depending on your political leaning, you either really liked it or you really hated it, I suppose. But one thing's for sure, Sean Spicer's contention that this was the most watched ever definitely is not true. It's on par with last year, which was about the lowest rated. So at the moment, the early ratings are in to make it look like it got about 11.5 million, which is slightly up from last year, but last year was an all-time low. So the Emmys are not I just think we're in awards show fatigue for the most part anyway anymore, and we certainly are when it comes to the Emmys, I guess. And, of course, a lot of the shows that get nominated are not the popular shows. Broadcast network television is almost entirely shut out, and shows that won the big prizes are relatively unseen by the mass populace. I mean, Handmaid's Tale was a really, really rough allegory that I'm sure not a lot of people saw, but those who saw really appreciated it. But it put Hulu on the map. I mean, Hulu being the first streaming service to get a big prize like that, upstaging Netflix and Amazon. So that was a big deal for them. But in terms of the shows that people revere, I guess that's what the People's Choice Awards is for.
I love the Sean Spicer because it was just funny. And people have to take it for what it is. Why is everyone so upset about this? And why are people upset that Colbert talked about Trump? That's what they do. That's what he does on his show. Of course he's going to do it for the Emmy Awards.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, some people are upset that there were so many Trump jokes during the show, but, I mean, it is the nature of the beast. And then the other half were really upset that they put Sean Spicer on to sort of make fun of his tenure as press secretary, where a lot of people found that act not funny, and this idea of normalizing any of it drives a lot of people crazy. So in that regards, the fact that it is comedy, and I thought it worked as comedy myself, and you looked at the expression of the people in the audience, that was one of the few moments of true surprise. People were absolutely gobsmacked that happened. And the cutaway to Melissa McCarthy was priceless, knowing that she had won an Emmy 1 week before.
Yep.
You know, she already had the Emmy for having played him because she got it at the awards the week before. And so watching her watch him was something. Was she squirming? Was she enjoying it? You really didn't know, but it was like it was true television.
Yes. We're talking with the TV Guide senior critic, Matt Rausch. My favorite moment of the night. We're going to play it for you right here.
Sometimes when you're acting, you get a chance to bring a bigger message, and this is their contribution and your contribution. We shone a light on domestic abuse.
Nicole Kidman, I thought, brought down the house last night. Her speech was so good. It was wonderful.
It was, and I was really glad they didn't play her off because she took her time to say it, and they let her say it, which was great. And one thing about these shows I get really frustrated about is that they fill with padding, and there were some things in the show that were a little bit just silly, and I couldn't stand the announcer. But nonetheless, you get to something like that, and that's why those shows tend to sometimes be important. And when you have a show, I mean, actually a year where you have The Handmaid's Tale and Big Little Lies, which did have an undercurrent of domestic abuse as one of its main story points, that you had story shows that meant something to people, not just the diversity of the people who were winning, but sometimes the messages they were putting out there. And yeah, she was particularly eloquent, and winning her first Emmy, I mean, this is a woman who has, you know, won an Oscar before, and so we had a lot of movie stars up for that particular prize, and for her to win, it was a big moment for the show and for her, and she took advantage of it.
Isn't it interesting, because TV is now the thing, because we all have our shows on cable and people love to talk about these shows. You're seeing these movie stars like Nicole Kidman doing these cable shows now.
Well, absolutely. The idea that you have a show like Big Little Lies, which is only 7 episodes, so the time commitment is not terrific, and they're all talking about coming back for a sequel, but that was not guaranteed. And for the most part, they like to do these shows because they can come in and out of it. These anthology series, such as you see on FX, and now sometimes on HBO, and certainly on streaming the services. So you've got these stars doing Netflix projects, and in the case of Handmaid's Tale, Hulu and Amazon, you've got people doing what we see as television, but TV, of course, is so much more than about what's just on the box. And it's drawing a lot of people in to tell stories that would have never been told on network television. And of course, network television comes up empty for the most part at the Emmys, but
right.
But in terms of what's really great on television, television is just about everything nowadays, and everybody's doing it, and there's a reason for that, and they're telling some really great stories. The fact that Nicole Kidman was up opposite Reese Witherspoon, her co-star,
right,
and Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, they're all Oscar winners.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of, one thing about Big Little Lies winning everything is that the show called Feud about Bette Davis and Joan Crawford won nothing. And I kind of feel bad about that because I thought that was terrific too. But got to say, these were really great choices to be made.
Can we talk about what the women were wearing last night? I thought they all looked great. I thought Oprah looked fantastic, except for her Harry Carey glasses. What were those glasses? Why were they so thick and big?
I don't know, but if it helped her read the thing, as I did feel for Cicely Tyson, who was a true legend, but she had her moment there. But yes, I don't know. I'm not a fashion critic. I thought they looked okay. Everybody
Sarah Paulson,
nice.
Come on. That was the worst dress ever.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. And then I get this thing, too. Men should actually have to wear socks with tuxedos, I'm sorry, when I see those bare ankles as they're walking the stage. That kind of drives me crazy.
I said that to my wife last night. I go, what's going on? This is inappropriate. This is black tie. You should have socks on with your shoes.
Yeah, I mean, it's all black, you know, and it's like, it's black tie, and yeah, it's that whatever that fashion statement is, I disagree with it. But with the women, yeah, for the most part, they looked fine, and you could take issue with the fact somebody here at work said it looked like half of them were wearing feather dusters because there was a lot of fringe and stuff on things that people were carrying around. But I tend to say, okay, fine, it's not my thing. I'm busy like trying to figure out who's gonna win.
I like the big shows like the Golden Globes. I like the Emmys, the Oscars. We watch them as a family, and they're fun. I mean, it's something that you can kind of watch as a family, even though some of the political jokes go a little bit too far. But you're right. Network TV, there's really I'm trying to think of the network TV shows besides This Is Us that I watch right now.
Yeah, well, there's some good comedies on ABC. I think that I'm glad that Black-ish gets into the mix.
Okay, Black-ish, sure.
Important stuff.
Right.
Yeah, they did some pretty important things last year. And I do think that, like, truly mainstream great comedies like The Big Bang Theory with that great ensemble, I think they deserve to be nominated. They don't tend to be the last couple of years. Jim Parsons has won a number of years, but it has been a while now.
Right.
But those kind of shows that are true crowd pleasers and done the sort of traditional way where you've got it in front of a studio audience, that is a classic form of television that isn't given its due anymore, even though some of them are the most popular shows on TV, and a few of them, like Mom and Big Bang Theory, are actually really good. So in that regard, there is sort of an unfair advantage that these shows get on these different platforms, and they do shows with a different, more sort of a more sophisticated style, and they tend to be favored by the industry.
That's funny. I forget about those shows. Hey, man, great to talk to you. Matt Roche, TV Guide senior critic. You were on with John Friday. We thought we'd do a follow-up today. Since he's not here, I still wanted to do it, but we appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Pete.
All right. Take care.
I must say, I'm devastated. I had no idea how bad it really was.
You know, there's been 80,000 musicians on that stage. Just on stage at the
Ivy.
That's how long this has been going.
720 WGN. It's 223. Pete McMurray in for John Williams. The reason that I'm playing Billy Squier is they were talking about the Abbey Pub, and people that have listened to me for years remember my very first anniversary party was at the Abbey Pub when I came to Chicago Radio back in 1999 at the corner of Grace and Elston, because we knew Pat Looney, the son, who was the general manager at the time, and I lived with my two brothers, and we're like, let's do a party here because they have a back area. Well, in 2011, the Abbey Pub was on bar rescue, and then 2015, the bar burnt down, and it's been gone ever since. And if you've never seen Bar Rescue on Spike, you need to. It's an awesome show. You have the host, John Taffer, who comes to your bar, tells you you're running the bar into the toilet. He screams at you, yells at you, renovates it, and you start making money. And he's on the phone with us right now. It's John Taffer. John, did I get that right?
You did. Quite eloquently.
I mean, in most cases, you change the name of the bar, but the Abbey Pub, since it's a Chicago institution, you didn't do that here in 2011.
No, I didn't. You know, I weigh is the name or the brand an asset or a liability? In the case of the Abbey, it's an asset. As you just described, it's got a great history.
Right.
I think the Abbey is important to Chicago. And I think venues of the history like that, you know, should go on. And look at the Loonies. I mean, trying to pass it down to another generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat can pass it down to his kids. So I'm trying to perpetuate something that I think is important.
Well, I love what you're doing. In 2011, you renovated the bar. And then 2015, it was very sad because there's certain bars in Chicago that you grow up with, that you go to. And the Abbey Pub was one of those. And when we heard about the fire in 2015, it's been closed ever since. However, this is where you come in. And I want you to tell people what's going on.
So the family, of course, insurance is very difficult to deal with. And that took quite a long time. And of course, now that they've got their insurance dollars together, it's not enough money to complete the project. Then the building department and structural inspections and architectural work. So it's been a real struggle for them to get to this point. So we included them in a special episode of Back to the Bar last night, created up a GoFundMe account for them. And I started the account with $2,500 in it personally. And I understand, I haven't looked yet today, but I understand a few thousand people have hit it. I understand we're starting to raise money. And I really want to do this for the Abbey, for Chicago, and for the Looney family.
People can go to GoFundMe.com/BarRescueAbbeyPub if they'd like to donate. I mean, I'm sure there's thousands of people listening right now that have had at least one beer at the Abbey Pub over the years at Grace and Elston. But John, doing the show Bar Rescue on Spike, I mean, there's some weeks where you run into these bar owners where you just say, these guys are idiots. You fix the bar, and I'm sure you're leaving, and you never keep in touch. What is it with the Abbey? What is it with the Looney family?
Well, you know, I love them. My wife is from Chicago and actually knew them in elementary school growing up, but that isn't why they were on a show. It was just a coincidence. You know, during the original episode of Bar Rescue, I went to their home. I sat with the Loonies. I got to know Pat. You know, I got to know Tom really well. Pat is a fireman. I mean, he's a hero to me. Any fireman is.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much good here, you know, worth fighting for. And it's really inspired me to try to come through for them. So, you know, the Bar Rescue episode and the fact that their sales went up after Bar Rescue was there was all very important to me.
And how much money are they trying to raise?
Just $75,000, just to finish it up, I believe, is all they need.
Okay. And, man, when I heard about this, I'm like, we got to get Taffer on the show. I didn't realize the connection. Your wife grew up in Chicago?
She did. My daughter was actually born in Naperville. So I lived in Chicago for a while and ran a hotel company that was based in Downers Grove.
You're kidding.
Years ago. So I have some roots in Chicago, and I love that city. So you know, doing something that's significant to the city is important to me.
Bar Rescue is one of those shows that every time you turn on Spike, I feel like it's on. I mean, you're always on.
Every Sunday we are. The Bar Rescue Marathons have almost become so predictable. It's part of culture these days.
I love when you get in the faces of these bar owners. I mean, people have to love that.
Yeah, you know, they set the tone if you really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that are confrontational get confrontation.
Right.
The ones that are agreeable, you know, get a lot of love. And really, it's so real in the moment. Nothing is ever scripted. There's no actors. I get about a 30-second briefing before I walk in. I've never met anyone before. It's so real and so organic.
I think that's why it survived so long.
And when you heard about the Abbey Pub, did you talk to your wife about it, or did you just go in cold?
Well, when she heard I was going there, she's the one who said to me, and I know that family. I went to school with them. So she hadn't communicated with them in many years.
Okay.
So it was just a fun coincidence.
The Looney family. And Pat is a good man. I'm glad you brought him up. Grace and Elston, the Abbey Pub, they're trying to raise money to rebuild the pub. GoFundMe.com/BarRescueAbbeyPub is the website if you'd like to donate. And, of course, Back to the Bar. With John Taffer, you can get it on demand, or you'll see it on Spike in probably 30 minutes if you turn it on. John, it's really cool to talk to you, man. I enjoy the show, and it was a great chat, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Look forward to it. Take care.
That was a 63-yard punt by Pat O'Donnell.
Best offensive play the Bears have had all day.
Well, that's the truth. 720 WGN. One of the toughest Chicago Bears to put on a jersey, number 46, joins us. It is Doug Plank. You were at the game yesterday.
Yes, I was. Yeah, unfortunately, there was a lot of Chicago Bear fans there. I mean, I thought they were really voicing their concern throughout the game. I mean, you could definitely tell they were presence, but it was just a very disappointing ending.
There's now four people in my life that I text during every game. It's my brother Ed, my brother Dave. I always text Hamp. Some days he doesn't respond. He didn't respond yesterday because I know he was furious. And now you are my go-to guy because I get so frustrated watching the Chicago Bears. You can't spot a team 26 points and give up four turnovers in the first half. You can't do that, Doug.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm going to take, I guess, a little bit of defense, you know, for the defensive players. You know, you start looking at scores in the National Football League, around the league, and, you know, games in the 20s are not that unusual in terms of scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from an offensive standpoint, it was something that was inconsistent. It looked like the players became tired as the game was on. I mean, it was very, very hot in that stadium. And you can talk about the heat, but until you're actually down there on the field and that much humidity with that temperature, I mean, there's no question I think it had an impact on the Chicago Bears, much more than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because they practiced in it all the time. But, you know, no excuse for the turnovers. You know, some of the play selection I didn't understand, you know, accordingly on the down and distance. You know, sometimes they had third downs and they were trying to run the football, and other cases, you know, they didn't need, you know, 25 yards to go pick up a first down, and they were trying to stretch the ball down the field, and it just opened itself for turnovers during the course of the game.
Now, I want to remind people, even though you're a great player for the Chicago Bears, you were also a coach and you won a championship in the Arena Football League, so you understand the coaching aspect. And you saying that, okay, good. So you're thinking to yourself, what is John Fox doing? Let's start, number one, with the quarterback, Mike Glennon. Do you take a look at Trubisky next week, or do you just sit him for a while? Well, first of all, you don't play him against the Steelers. I'm sorry. Do you play him in 2 weeks, or do you let Mike Glennon do his thing for the rest of the season?
You know what? I still think, you know, he did a pretty good job for week one against the Falcons. I would still stay with Glennon. I mean, I think he's a solid quarterback. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, obviously the people down here at Tampa were very familiar with who he is, who he was, having been here before. And I think they had a very good idea what he could and could not do. You know, he hung a few balls up there that were intercepted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just some of the course of the games. And, you know, more importantly than anything else, you know, of course you can always analyze the performance on the game. It was the energy and the momentum. You could just feel the momentum always shifting back to Tampa Bay.
Right.
I know that the crowd, I think, was definitely into it. But in terms of the turnovers, you know, it's those psychological things during the course of the game that really make a huge difference. And, you know, it did surprise me. You know, there was a couple broken tackles and things like that. But, you know, I'm still going to stick up for the defense because I was the safety. I'm not going to put it all on the offense. But, you know, you just can't score 7 points late in the game and hope to have any chance of winning.
Right. So you said the defense, okay, not too bad of a job yesterday?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, okay. I think, you know, remember, it gets back to psychological.
Right.
You're just constantly getting pounded down and you're not scoring any points. And you come to a conclusion somewhere, maybe in the second half, that we're probably not going to win this game. Then it's a matter of just playing for pride,
right,
instead of being able to go out there and just, hey, we can win this football game.
Well, we were sending text messages yesterday. At a halftime, I sent you a text.
Yes,
okay, we're down 26 zip. Let's see if they quit in the second half. Were you, what is your feeling on that?
Well, I don't think they quit. I think it was a continuation, you know, at least for the third quarter. You know, I would say, you know, the fourth quarter, I think they made some efforts. You know, I don't know if that was more of a lack of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just realizing they were going to win the game. But at the same time, you know, they did score a touchdown at the end. I think that was more important than anything else. But, you know, it's got to be disappointing for Chicago Bear fans. Early in the year, I know these were two teams outside the division. But the bottom line is they were still two losses, and it's really, really hard to recoup and get your season back on track when you drop the first two.
It's so hard. We're talking with Doug Plank. I got to tell you, as a season ticket holder, North End Zone, Section 251, and a lifelong Bear fan, I am frustrated because the entire nation laughs at our franchise. I'm married to a Packer fan. I get it from her family. I get it from my friends in San Francisco that are 49er fans. I get it from everywhere. I am tired of us being the laughing stock of the National Football League. When is this going to change?
You know, I think that's a question that Bear fans have a rightful answer, you know, rightful question to ask. You know, it's been a long time since the Chicago Bears were dominating and just a force around the league. And, you know, I think especially this early in the season, you know, myself, much like you, I can't tell you how many Bear fans that either called me or sent a message or texted me or emailed me over the course of the last day and just absolute just frustration and disgust, you know, thinking that the team was going to be doing much better. You know, there's always a chance for teams to recuperate, though, you know, and obviously they have a brand new quarterback who they just drafted. They really haven't put him in there and given him a chance yet.
Right.
I still think Mike Glennon's a very, very good quarterback, and I think they've got good players. But, you know, I think rather than trying to just, you know, overdiagnose the problems right now at 0-2, you know, I'd like to look, maybe give them four games and then try to make a determination on, I think, what they've done, what they could do, or where they're going. I don't think the two games can tell a season, but at the same time, I have to tell you, as a former player, it was just been disappointing watching the performance that they gave yesterday.
Well, we have the Steelers coming to town on Sunday, and we're just going to get pummeled.
Well, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers are known to be very tough and physical. So are the Chicago Bears.
Oh.
You know, so I think it's an effort and opportunity to possibly, I mean, think about what a great turnaround the season would be if they beat the Steelers, though. I mean, that would put them right back.
You always go positive on me. I'm ready to go down that dark path.
Well, you know what it is, too? I as a player, I never really enjoyed it much when, because we had some despicable seasons, too.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously, they didn't start very fast. They maybe ended okay. But the bottom line is, you know, it's you know, for especially those players that are trying to do everything they can. Obviously, the team isn't meshing right now, but I still think they've got certain amount of talent on that team, and they have the capacity to win. And I think yesterday down here, though, you know, they went up against a very fresh team. What do I mean by that? They didn't play week one. You know, that Miami game was canceled. So they came out energetic. The crowd was into it. You know, all the factors for a win were there. And they just took advantage of it. I think they owned the line of scrimmage. They opened up holes for their running backs. They put pressure on the Bears' offensive scheme.
Yeah.
You know, their quarterback back in the pocket. So I'm not so quick to just say at 0-2 the season's over. It isn't. But, you know, I think, you know, two more games I think will give a much better idea of where this season is going to go.
I mean, you brought up, you've seen some bad years. I mean, remember the late 70s with Bob Avellini. I mean, those were those were tough days. Okay. Do you agree with me that John Fox is clearly gone after this season?
Well, I would say everything goes in trends. You know, you can't make a determination on just 1 year.
Right.
He hasn't been here 1 year. So I think, you know, it's fair that if, you know, things do not go well, if things don't get turned around here pretty quickly. I think it's certainly fair. I mean, look, I'm not saying just in Chicago. This is the way it is in sports anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, coaches get fired after 1 year. They can only have one bad year in the National Football League and get fired. So would it be possible to take a look and analyze and say, really, where are we going with this team? Is it going in the right direction? Are these the players we need to have success? I think it's fair to ask those questions because, I mean, after everything said and done, this is about the fans. This is about satisfying your fan base, making sure that you put a product out there that they're willing to watch and happy. You know, there were some years that we didn't do that well from a record standpoint, but we were making progress, and you could see that our team was getting better.
Right.
And we played, you know, from the first play to the last play like it was our last play. And, you know, those are the kind of things that, you know, it's hard to trick fans that have been experienced and are very veteran, and they know what a good team looks like and what a bad team looks like.
Doug Plank, who do we look at as head coach for next season? Let's say John Fox he's probably gone. This is year number three. I say he's gone. Do you look at Sean Payton? Because he's probably gone in New Orleans.
You know what's tough about Sean, though? I mean, you can say there's been some really good things about him, and I respect him because I think he's come up with some incredible offensive schemes. But you look at the defense, there's been several defensive coordinators there now. You know, they've never really got – I mean, when you think of defense, you don't think of New Orleans Saints.
No.
And that's not to criticize them. It's just to say that the Chicago Bears have this defense in their DNA.
Right.
And I think all the coaches that have been here, Mark Trestman, for example, that really tried to focus on the offense and the quarterback and all those sort of things, that didn't work out. That experiment didn't work out very well. And I think any team that – you know, any coach that the Chicago Bears hire, he better have defense as number one priority, because I think when you're in the town of Chicago, you just can't put a team out there that doesn't have an awesome defense.
Of course. I mean, that's what the Bears have been known for. They have defense. They have a pretty good running back and no passing game. I mean, that's what's happened for years. But usually, if you're looking for a head coach, you go to the best. So you look at Belichick. Does he have anybody that we could steal to bring over here? Any assistants?
You know, there's always a chance. You know, you never know that. You know, everybody can say, no, I'm not going to leave. But, you know, that when that situation, that opportunity comes and they say, hey, listen, we're going to give you the opportunity to be a head coach in the National Football League, there aren't very many people on this planet that would turn that down.
Yeah.
So I would say without a doubt, everybody, anybody, you know, for the Chicago Bears, I mean, that's a key role, key job in any league, especially in the National Football League. And, I think that, you know, they'd get a lot of interest, obviously.
Would you ever go back to coaching, or are you done?
Yeah, I think I'm done. I mean, I'm not saying I know it all. I don't know it all. I've had plenty of good things and bad things happen to me. You know, I've coached a little bit, you know, 12 years. That's a little bit for most coaches because they're coaching 20 and 30 years. And, you know, I'm not going to act like I know it all because I don't. I learn things every single day. I just know that one thing I can determine and see, and that's effort. You know, from players, you know, the little things, you know, chasing, you know, making sure you're pursuing the football, you know, even if it's across the field, run across the field, the guy might fumble the ball or something like that. It's those little things, I think, intangible things that make the difference between a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly I think even in that game the other day, you know, there were certain key points there that happened. The ball was on the ground. You know, Tampa happened to get it instead of the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of the people maybe that were around those plays that had a chance,
right,
maybe with a little bit more effort, a little bit more recognition. Those little things are really what makes an intangible difference between being a winner and being a loser.
That is so true. And they say you make your own luck. And if you're a skilled player, those things, you're going to notice more things. And that's how you get those fumbles, or you're used to diving for balls. And that's the problem with this team. And I swear to God, Josh Bellamy, I don't know why, he just bugs me to death. I know we have mediocre receivers because no one wants to come to the Chicago Bears, but I feel like he drops so many balls that are thrown to his hands. Just catch the ball.
You know what? And think about that, though. To me, when I'm watching on the sideline and it's a receiver that maybe doesn't execute or drops, just like they could say, well, you missed a tackle. I agree. I totally agree. But it's a psychological aspect of it.
Yeah.
When someone drops a ball that's going to be a touchdown, it resonates throughout the entire team. And I think it just brings them down a level where, you know, instead of this great expectation, they start thinking, oh, no, bad things are going to happen to us. We're unlucky. And this isn't our year. This isn't the game or whatever the case might be. And it's little things like that. Truly that make a difference between winning and losing.
I agree 100%, and it's all about attitude. And when you're losing like this and you're 0-2, you're thinking, oh, my God, are we going to get out of this? And you got the Steelers coming to town on Sunday, and you're thinking, oh, God, how can it get any worse? And then
you
it does.
What it is, honestly, I would rather play against the Steelers than, say, some other team that hadn't won a game yet because, again, going back to that point, if they can turn their entire season around this
right.
weekend, even though they lost two games, they come out and beat the Steelers, even if it's only by 1 point, it doesn't matter. There's a great new attitude, you know, a fresh.
And well, it builds their confidence, too. It's going to build their confidence. Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be great for the fan base. I mean, because if you can beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, that's worthy of something. And I just think that, you know, they can pull it together. I mean, the other thing, too, is, you know, they've got tape out there now, not very impressive game tape of the last two games. And I, for the Steelers, they're probably coming in here thinking, we're going to beat the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge advantage for the Bears.
Right.
You know, if they come out and play with the determination and the willpower that I know they have, anything's possible. There's no doubt in my mind they could beat the Steelers, especially with a good game plan. And like I said, they could definitely get this season and put it back on track.
Well, I'm a lifelong Bears fan. I'm a season ticket holder for the Chicago Bears, and it's really a thrill to have you on the show. And the biggest mistake, Doug Plank, number 46, that you've ever done in your entire life is give me your phone number. So I
well,
will.
Listen, I could feel your energy and how much you cared for the Bears. First 3 minutes, I mean, so it's a mutual feeling, I promise you. I'm thrilled to be on the show.
My wife thinks I'm nuts because I feel like I watched the beginning of the game standing up. I'm standing up, standing in front of my TV. I'm not sitting on the couch because I'm always on edge because I feel like we need to score first, but you get it.
You know what's funny? I watched that whole game standing up. There's no way I could sit down and watch that game. I'm punching, making fists at each other, punching my hand and shoulders and everything else. It's easier for me to stand up, watch the game where I can try to kick something, push something.
I love it. This is why I love you. And Hampton is the exact same way. You're two peas in a pod. I love it. Doug Plank. Doug, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure. Okay, we'll talk next week. Thanks.
All right. It's 720 WGN. Anna's here. It's good to see you. What's happening?
So we've got much coming up on the show today. We're going to talk to Tom Skilling is going to make an early appearance with us as Rose steps into the studio here. We're going to talk about the Jose and Maria, now a severe threat to the Caribbean. So we've got the latest in hurricane news as you're still talking about, you know, two areas of the country still recovering when you've got Texas and Florida area. So
I do want to mention we had Bruno Abate in the studio. Ro, I'm supposed to hug you because Bruno's cologne is on me and I'm going to put it on you. So we have to hug each other.
Yes, he always has. Right. He does.
Did he kiss you? Do the double kiss thing, the Italian style?
He actually kissed me on the lips and I liked it.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
He's having a
sexy man.
I saw Nicole Kidman do that to someone who wasn't her husband last night.
Did she not thank her husband? She thanked her kids.
Don't know.
It's always the end of the relationship when that happens.
You wonder.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's meaningful. And then she kissed another man on the lips, too.
The Hillary Swank principle.
Recipe for Change, recipeforchangeproject.org is Bruno's website. They're having a fundraiser coming up on September 21st. I wanted to mention that before I left.
I will be at that.
Yes.
He's doing the God's work, actually, in the jail system.
I can't believe
Isn't
it.
Isn't it amazing?
Well, I heard Sheriff Dart on Cochran's show last week, and he's talking about Bruno. I'm like, wow, I'm filling in for John. I might as well have him in.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And the kids here, our kids, the Kevin and the Violetta, they went out actually to Cook County Jail and they did a little video about It's so condescending. They did a video about Bruno and all the stuff they're doing there, where he's teaching young nonviolent offenders the kitchen skills so that they can go work in the industry.
That's really so impressive.
Great program.
It's really very impressive.
Yep.
It's good stuff. All right. Have a great show.